B.O.B.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Joining us now, he is the man, the political editor of Breitbart News. Got to get their app. Just go to your app store, Breitbart News, or go to Breitbart.com. And he's joining us now. Matt Boyle got his finger on the pulse of everything going on. Matt, great to have you.
Hey, John. What's going on, brother?
All right, number one, you wrote a kick-butt story on CNN the other day over this fake news story, which I've been covering all day because I'm done with them. And I'm done with the fact that they had a false source in Lanny Davis who raised $150,000 on GoFundMe off a false story. Even the Washington Post retracted it. They refused to retract it. They're lying to everybody. They don't want the story to go away. They're hoping it's true. It's not. So it's now a propaganda institution. I mean, when you have a story that you know is a lie and you fail to retract it, now you're not a source of news, you're a propaganda machine, am I right?
Well, yeah, not only that, but when they put it out there, they knew they were lying in it. And by the way, this is Carl Bernstein, okay? This is the guy who broke Watergate, who, along with at the Washington Post, back during the Nixon administration, who's on this byline, and they lied, and he knowingly lied to his audience in that piece, demonstrably. Here's why. He said in the story that Lanny Davis declined to comment on the article for the article in the piece. But the fact of the matter is that Lanny Davis was one of his sources, an anonymous source for the piece. Which is it, right? Like, but the fact of the matter is that Carl Bernstein lied to the CNN audience. He knows he lied to the CNN audience when they published the original story, and that's not even to mention the fact that the entire core of their article, which is that it, basically what they said was, is that Michael Cohen, President Trump's former attorney, was willing to testify to Robert Mueller that President Trump did know about the Trump Tower Russia meeting between Paul Manafort, Don Jr., Jared Kushner, and that Russian attorney lady, I can never pronounce her name, back during the campaign beforehand, and approved of it and so on and so forth. Well, it's just not true. Michael Cohen isn't willing to testify to that. In fact, Michael Cohen testified to the exact opposite under oath before two congressional committees.
So
this kind of thing's fake. The whole network's credibility goes down with this thing.
So you're
taking that they're standing by it when they know it's not true is even more crazy.
Okay, well, that I've been focused on the latter of what you just said, that it's now not true because the source went on the record and said he made it up, basically, that it's not true, that he was mistaken or he misspoke or whatever he said. Basically, Lanny Davis, who was the source, Cohen's lawyer, said, well, that's not really what happened. I just came out the wrong way. Anyway, he retracted it. But you're saying that CNN knew it was a lie when they promoted it. That's very different. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, they did. They said in their story, so the part of their story that said that Lanny Davis declined to comment was a lie, right? They don't know that the other part of it was a lie. Because Lanny Davis was telling them that that's what happened, right? Like that Cohen was willing to testify to that, even though he wasn't. But the fact of the matter is that CNN has an obligation to the truth, right, like to their audience, to ensure, okay, so if they're going to report that two sources are telling them that Michael Cohen is going to testify to this, right, like, or
right,
three sources or 15 sources, the question is Michael Cohen going to testify to that or not? right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I can get 15 sources to tell me whatever I want, right? Like that, and they can too, okay? The question is are those sources telling the truth? And that's the real problem here, is that CNN is willing to lie and cite people who lie to them and never pay the consequences for that. That's the real problem here. They're literally willing to put out information that isn't true based off anonymous sources. And they've proved it. And Carl Bernstein of Watergate fame is on that byline. So is Jim Sciutto, former Obama administration official, who's now CNN's chief national security correspondent. But the point is that the fact that these guys are willing to lie and they're willing to put out information that they know is untrue or that they aren't sure if it's true, that's provided to them by sources who are willing to mislead them, then that's just not journalism anymore. They surrendered that. They don't do journalism at CNN.
It's pure propaganda.
Yep.
It's like Pravda. It's like, you know, the Chinese news service. I mean, it's like it's just propaganda. I mean, their blinding hatred for Trump has reached a crazed fever pitch that is now blinding all senses of reason. Look, Matt, both you and I'm former, you're current, were editors of major publications. And you do make mistakes, Matt. I mean, I've made them. You know, I've approved stuff and then scratched my head. Why did I do that? And found out that, you know, the sources were not credible or whatever we did. And so you immediately in our business, you immediately run a major retraction, right? And it becomes a one-day story.
A correction. And
yeah, you run a correction. And, you know, I was in the newspaper business. You put it on the inside page two, inside cover page two. You put a correction. I mean, it's a one-day issue. You know, you screw up. But this isn't that. What this is not an honest screw up.
There's another thing here too, right? Like, so when you're using anonymous sources, and this is okay. I'm okay with anonymous sources. I do it personally in my own byline. There's sometimes there calls for anonymous sources because sometimes you can't get an accurate view of something until such time as you're able to grant somebody anonymity, right? Like, so I'm not against anonymous sources. Okay, I think there's a time and a place for it. I try not to do it unless I need to tell a story. But the point is that sometimes you have to do it. But the problem is that what we've seen is from the entire establishment media is that they abuse that, okay? And they don't make an effort to ensure that whatever they're – so when you do use anonymous sources, you have an obligation as a journalist to – a higher standard than if somebody's on the record in your story, right? Just because you have a source saying something doesn't mean you should report it. You have to be sure that it's true. Especially, you're putting your credibility on the line behind a story if you have an anonymous source, if you're using anonymous sources. So that's the thing. When Carl Bernstein and Jim Sciutto write a piece that says Michael Cohen is going to testify to X and they are citing anonymous sources, they're putting their credibility personally. If they aren't citing Michael Cohen or his attorney or something, they're putting their personal credibility on the line when it comes to is Michael Cohen actually going to testify to X? And it turns out Michael Cohen is not going to testify to what they reported that he's going to testify. And that's particularly problematic for them. It's just another example of this. And by the way, the way that the network has handled this has been abysmal. Last year, when we caught them printing fake news about Anthony Scaramucci, they retracted the story, begrudgingly, and then fired the reporter on the byline.
That's right.
And the editor of the story and the section chief. So there were three forced resignations, if you will, from CNN over this last year. This year, there's no accountability at all. They've given up on any accountability, and they're digging in, and they're refusing to withdraw the article.
They don't want accountability.
Stating that they stand by their fake story.
Right. Well, because, Matt, they don't want accountability now, and they don't want real news. It's turned into a propaganda network with a crazed, insane hatred of President Trump. And look, there's some business model that the CEO has. I mean, their CEO is not dumb. This is a seasoned executive from NBC who has been in the media industry a very long time and been very successful. So these guys don't get these jobs just based on anything but a solid resume and track record of financial performance. So their leadership, they have some model that is telling them this is their way to financial solvency. And maybe it's because they simply need to attract the anti-Trump crazy, just crazed or whatever you want to call it, intense loyalty position. And that's what's going to drive their ratings, and that's what's going to keep them economically viable with sponsors and advertisers. I mean, there's a model behind what they're doing. They're just not doing this on a lark. So whatever their model is, it's saying that, you know, this is what we should do. But at the end of the day, I don't know why I would believe now anything that comes over this network that says breaking news that has any unnamed source in it. I'm not sure that I would believe it. And isn't that a real problem for them?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't. And that model that you're talking about, and you're exactly right about the idea that there's a model, and I don't know exactly what it is that they're going for. If they're going for power or influence or money or whatever it is, but it ain't journalistic integrity, okay? They surrendered that a long time ago. Mm-hmm. In fact, there used to be a time, by the way, that CNN used to stand for journalistic integrity. You remember back during the 90s when they reported that the U.S. had used chemical weapons when it didn't?
Yes.
And CNN had to do a retraction, an apology for their misreporting. And they actually did a lengthy internal investigation, right? Like they hired an outside legal firm to figure out what happened. None of that's happening today when they make these kind of mistakes. Now they just cover it up internally. But the you know, gone are the days when something like a major journalistic scandal happens. And that's what this is. This is a journalism scandal. And it's been going on for 2 years, okay? The processes inside CNN, all of this connects back to what they did during the Scaramucci thing, and it connects to all these other fake stories that they put out on a regular basis. But this is a major journalism scandal, and the fact that CNN has not hired an outside counsel or brought in experts to do an investigation into this, and the fact that they aren't being transparent with their audience, major journalism scandals of the outlet will be transparent with their audience. Like, so for instance, when Stephen Glass happened with the New Republic, itself actually took down Stephen Glass, right? Like, they were very, after it came out and it was clear that what he was, they ran a series of articles themselves exposing Stephen Glass. When Jason Blair happened at the New York Times, the New York Times on its own front page, apologize to its readers and expose them. But when CNN engages in behavior that's far worse than both of those things combined, which is what they're doing right now, there is no effort to be to have accountability. There is no effort to be transparent. And the fact of the matter is, we now have one of the almost a god in the journalism industry, Carl Bernstein, the guy who alongside Bob Woodward broke Watergate, is now enthralled in this whole thing. He's ensnared in it. I mean, that's how bad this is at CNN. Their journalism scandal is just a disgrace to those who believe in honesty. It really is, and they should be ashamed of themselves. And I hope that one day or another they do bring in an outside counsel to handle the investigation and pledge to be transparent with the public and pledge to put forward a report with all of that outside counsel's findings. I don't know if they'll ever do that, but I hope that they will.
John Frederick's Radio Network, Trucking the Truth Across America, your Godzilla of the Truth in Washington, D.C. Today we're with Matt Boyle. He's the executive political editor of Breitbart News. You can read Matt, go to Breitbart.com, download their app like I have on my phone, Breitbart News. Just go to the App Store. You can get that. Then you can sign up for their updates, which I get. And then you can highlight Matt. So if he does a story, you get like a super duper double update, ringy dingy, on your phone from Matt Boyle. And I always read his stuff. Matt, I tell you what, enjoyed having you on today. And the CNN thing, I am in agreement with you. I think it's one of those things that can really sink this entire network, because I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, unless you're looking for pure propaganda, like The Onion, right? Unless you're looking for a source of so-called information that is going to push out things that are fake in order to sell you an ad or something, unless that's what, if you're looking for anything credible, CNN simply no longer is going to pass the test. I think this is really going to hurt them. I think it's going to hurt them with their advertisers.
You can't trust CNN. They've demonstrated now that they're willing to lie to their audience and that they're willing to push out fake news for whatever purposes and stand by it. And it's just troubling. It's really bad. I think CNN destroyed its credibility. And
I do.
A semblance of it.
I don't think they're getting it back. Okay, let's comment. Ron DeSantis, big win yesterday. The president backed him. When the president weighed into December, he was at 8%. Putnam at 53 beats him by 20 points. Putnam, the establishment candidate, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it was a huge win last night. I talked to DeSantis this weekend, and he laid out that the president's support for him was a major factor in why he was going to win. And they called this race within 15 minutes of the polls closing in the panhandle last night. The panhandle closes later than the rest of the state, so they don't have the results until about 8 o'clock. They start trickling in Florida. And they called it within 15 minutes of the polls closing. I mean, that is a blowout election for Ron DeSantis. He's going to be a fantastic governor. And he's going up against this radical socialist who ended up defeating the Democrat establishment candidate down in Florida, this Andrew Gillum guy. And so I think as more comes out about his government being under FBI investigation in Tallahassee, literally, he's under a cloud of FBI investigation, and he's a radical leftist socialist who doesn't believe in borders. This guy is to the left of Karl Marx, and you know, Bernie Sanders was down there campaigning for him. I think Ron DeSantis is going to sail into the governor's mansion, it's going to be a battle over the next couple months, because the whole media is going to go, you know, have all in for the socialist radical leftist. But the point is that Ron DeSantis is a solid guy, and I think a Navy veteran. He won the Bronze Star when he was serving in Iraq, Fallujah. So the point is that I think Ron DeSantis is going to be a great governor.
There you have it. Ron DeSantis, big victory. And I do agree with you. I think Florida is going to be good news on November 6th. I think DeSantis wins pretty handily, maybe 53-54%. And I also think Rick Scott is going to knock off incumbent Democrat and former astronaut Bill Nelson. In that race, Scott now edging ahead in virtually every poll out there, 2 or 3. He's going to win that race. We're out of time. John Frederick's Radio Network. I want to thank Matt Boyle. He is the editor. Go to Breitbart.com. Matt, thanks for being with us. I got to tell you, we're going to be talking about the CNN thing through much of the day, because what they did is almost unthinkable. I mean, it is almost unthinkable what they did. Joining us now, Carl Higbee. He's got a great new podcast, Liberty and Cocktails, and he's a former Navy SEAL. He served our country admirably. He's been involved in the Trump effort for a very long time in the America First agenda. Carl, great to have you.
Thanks for having me back on.
Carl, the CNN thing is almost unfathomable to me.
It should be unfathomable, but it's not. It's par for the course. Now, I said this, I was never asked back onto CNN after Kate Baldwin and I, about 2 years ago, got into an argument where I questioned her anonymous source for us. And you can YouTube Kate Baldwin, Carl Higbee clash. It is the funniest thing you've ever seen. I'm calm, cool, collective, polite on a panel of 4-1. And they're talking about, well, the anonymous sources said Trump's a dirtbag. And I said, you know what? Name those sources, because they're not credible. Sure enough, 24 hours later, I was 100% correct. CNN was 100% wrong again. And after that, CNN never had me back, because they couldn't stand being questioned. What happened to the two-source rule that most journalists play by, where you confirm whatever information with an additional source? Now they're taking these anonymous sources, the anonymous stories, they're unverified, and it's costing them their credibility. I'm going to make this prediction right here. when Trump wins a second term, I do believe that the Turner AT&T mega merger is going to separate from CNN, and CNN's going to go down the tube.
Why?
Because they're not a credible news source. They have gone so far, they're completely ideological. They're no longer a credible news source. They pay to be in airports to get what little ratings they have to barely keep up, not even keep up with reruns of SpongeBob SquarePants. And I think that they're a liability for that whole the whole Turner system, the whole AT&T merger. I think they're a huge liability. And I believe that eventually they're going to be dropped and they're going to be forced to be self-sustaining. And their ideological whatever mission is not going to be enough to sustain advertisers because they're already dropping like stones. And I think it's going to I think Trump will have beaten CNN in 4 years.
I go on CNN. It's my network. They're good people. All the people call that I interact with there have been just great to me for a very long time. You know, probably have been going on there for about a 3 year period now. And the hosts, except Anderson Cooper, I don't know him. I've met him, but I don't know him. I've never had a conversation with him, but all the other people that I go on with, from Kate Baldwin, who you mentioned, to Carol Costello on Headline News, to Don, to Chris Cuomo, to John King in the afternoon, to the makeup
like Cuomo.
People.
Cuomo and
They're
Don
great
Lemon,
people.
I'm very cordial with Don, and I text back and forth. Nice guy. We disagree on damn near everything.
Don's a great guy.
Super nice guy.
Great guy. Salt of the earth. And they have good people there. But I tell you, what they're doing now with this fake news story on Lanny Davis and the fact that they just don't own up to it. And I know their executives decided to, I guess, follow the Trump strategy and double down. I mean, you can't double down on a complete lie. And this is what happened. I mean, this story was never true. And Lanny Davis put it out there to get money. CNN fell for it. Or I get that. I mean, you should have a double source. You don't. And I get running it because it is his lawyer. And probably they said they figured Cohen said that to him. But then Lanny Davis backed off on it because it's not true. Immediately, they should have backed off on the story. Instead, they've tripled down. And so now all they're doing is continuing to push out a complete news fabrication. And remember, when that story broke, it was like breaking news. This is the end of Trump. Impeachment coming next week. We have a source who says President Trump was told ahead of time about this meeting and personally sanctioned it, blah, blah, blah. All false. Lie.
Exactly. All false. And, you know, they always have some anonymous source that is telling them something when the people who are coming out against it were the actual people in the room, senior cabinet officials and things like that. You know, my problem with CNN is, look, you know what? You want to report an agenda? Fine. That's okay. But at least get the facts right and tell the whole story. Like, I'd be more impressed with CNN if they just wouldn't tell parts of the story rather than lie about it. And my problem, too, is, you know, CNN went after me. They ran 36 primetime segments against me and some statements I made 6 years ago. And they didn't – these are people that I know personally. Not one of them called me for my side of the story. They didn't – not one of them. They didn't want to come on and have me come on and debate me or debate them. They just wanted to tell their side, hammer away with no opposing. That's not journalism.
Well, there is no journalism here. They're not after news or the truth. I mean, when CNN started, it was a cable news network. I mean, you turned it on to get news 24 hours a day. It was a great idea. You know, Ted Turner started it. And, you know, remember the first Iraq war? I forget what it was called. Was that Desert Storm, right? Remember the first one where Bernard Shaw was on the roof and the bombs were going off? I mean, in the U.S., we had never seen coverage like that. And it was fascinating. And, I mean, you got a bird's eye view of what was going on. And so, you know, CNN mattered to bring you news in America. Now it's basically a propaganda network, worse than MSNBC. I don't know. I mean, look, they've got
to
have
a
business.
It used to be a titan of news.
It was. They have to have a business strategy here, Carl. I mean, every company has one. And I know their new CEO that came from NBC is not dumb. And so he's got to have a strategy. They somehow must have done enough surveys to figure out that in order for them to be viable, they have to be anti-Trump 100% of the time, and somehow that's going to bring them a viewership they need in order to sell X percentage of advertising based on their daily and nightly viewership. So they have to have a model in the back room that's backing this, But I tell you what, it might be short-term gain, but it's...
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
N.com/Mark.
Well, that's RN News. I'm Wally Hines in Washington. Meghan McCain delivered an emotional tribute to her father, former Presidents Obama and George W. Bush. Also remembered the man who would have their job during the memorial service for John McCain at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. earlier today. It was the final time America would be able to pay their respects to the Arizona senator who died last week from brain cancer at the age of 81. McCain will be buried tomorrow after a private service at the U.S. Naval Academy. Authorities in Amsterdam say a 19-year-old Afghan citizen who was shot and detained after a double stabbing at the city's main railway station had a terrorist motive. The Dutch capital's government said in a statement issued earlier today that investigators reached that conclusion based on the suspect's first statements to police. College football this afternoon. Number 2 Clemson scored on all five of drives as the Tigers opened their season with a 48-7 rout of Furman. More details.
When our health insurance renewal notice arrived last fall, my wife and I made the decision to drop our plan. With the monthly premiums and deductible, we'd have to pay $30,000 just to use it. So we did our homework and switched to MediShare. The cost savings are incredible, over $500 a month, and we don't have to pay for services we don't need or don't agree with. Then, out of the blue, she had to have emergency surgery. Scary stuff. $150,000 in hospital bills, and MediShare members took care of everything. All we paid was our small portion. I'm a doctor who's been in healthcare for 20 years, and this is one of the most impressive programs I've ever seen. Thank God she's fully recovered, and now we're telling everyone about MediShare.
Call 877-64-BIBLE to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. MediShare. Call 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE.
Leave the summertime cooking to the Original Tunis Restaurant, 7400 103rd Street, just west of 295. Dine in, drive through, or use Uber Eats. The Original Kronos Gyros, shrimp, fish, oysters, wings, and more. The Original Tunis can cater any occasion. 317-9300. And talk with Z, the owner and founder. Ask him how your church or civic group can use the Original Tunis Restaurant for your next fundraiser. The Original Tunis Restaurant, 7400 103rd Street, open 7 days a week. Come meet Z, the founder.
Does your furnace need repair, your house need cleaning, or maybe you're ready to update your kitchen? Big or small, whatever your home improvement need, log on to handyman.homeadvisor.com. Home Advisor is a free online resource with instant access to top-rated remodelers, maids, handymen, roofers, and many other home contractors. It's easy and it's free. Just go to handyman.homeadvisor.com. Handyman.homeadvisor.com. That's handyman.homeadvisor.com.
WBOB tackles the issues.
When I look at some of these mass shootings that have happened in the past, a lot of these teachers had to sacrifice themselves to protect their students. Well, why not put them in the best position to fight back?
Every day.
Federal district judge in California expanded the ruling to say that even accompanied children can't be held for more than 20 days. I don't see how they can unless Congress gets its act together and passes legislation.
WBOB, your 2018 election authority. The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
A Clay County accident slows traffic on Blanding Boulevard southbound at Camp Francis Johnson Road. Cloudy tonight, a chance of rain and down to 76. Sun and clouds tomorrow with a breeze. Afternoon showers expected for Sunday and a high tomorrow 89. Right now, sunshine in Jacksonville. It's breezy and 86 degreesy. I'm Tom Murphy, and you're on Talk Radio WBOB.
I love America First Boston because they are the numero uno. That means number one in Spanish. Number one political action committee in the galaxy that supports President Trump's America First agenda. Now, tell me that's not exciting. You know, it is so exciting because this America First agenda, well, it's the reason we're having this booming economy and everything is going so well. But things don't always go. Things certainly didn't go well for Molly Tibbetts. And it happened again. You know, it's unbelievable. Another young woman, Molly Tibbetts, a 20-year-old college student. Think about this. 20 years old from Iowa. Had such a bright future ahead of her. I mean, 20 years old, right? I mean, I've got a 28-year-old, a 26-year-old, and a 14-year-old. And we've all been there, right? Got a 20-year-old daughter, a college student, and she was brutally murdered. It's so horrific. And an illegal alien reportedly confessed to the murder. Now, yet another life has tragically been cut short because of an immigration system that is failing us. Now, how many more American lives like Molly Tibbetts are going to be lost before the U.S. Congress actually does something and takes action to overhaul our broken system? Make no mistake, the brave men and women of ICE and our Border Patrol are heroes. On the front lines, they protect our homeland. They keep us safe day in and day out. But they can't bear the burden of ending illegal immigration alone. Congress must step up and fund a border wall and put an end to deadly sanctuary cities. Now call your representatives and senators today and tell them to fully fund the wall. For more information, go to AmericaFirstPolicies.org. That's AmericaFirstPolicies.org. This message has been paid for and authorized by America First Policies Incorporated. Joining me now, Curtis Ellis. Curtis is a senior policy advisor for America First Policies. Curtis Ellis was the former executive director of the American Jobs Alliance, of which now I am. He's their chairman emeritus. Curtis Ellis has been involved with me in fighting NAFTA and TPP and the Korean trade deal and these other trade deals for a quarter century. He worked in the Trump administration. He worked on the transition team. He worked in the campaign. And he's joining us now. And it's kind of like Christmas for us. Because if you're Curtis and Ellis and me, we've been fighting this for so long. And this president actually just delivered on a major campaign promise and has renegotiated NAFTA with Mexico to the U.S. advantage. Everybody said it couldn't be done. Everybody said it wouldn't happen. Everybody said we're going to have a trade war and farmers were going to not sell their soybean. Remember all that even a few weeks ago? Now he got it done. He got on the phone with the president of Mexico and he said, great job. I want to hug you. Now, man-child, Pierre Trudeau in Canada, he's kind of boxed in now, don't you think? Because he either comes to the table and accepts the terms to benefit the U.S. and to make this fair and even, or he's out in the cold. His choice. We'll see what plans out. The president says he's going to call him today. Joining us now to sort all this out, a new NAFTA deal. Thought we'd never see it. Curtis Ellis. Great to have you, Curtis.
Hey, it's great to be here. You know, I think the sticking point with Canada is going to be if Justin Trudeau can hug President Trump like the Mexican president wants to.
He wants to hug him. He says, I want to hug you.
Yeah.
It's like a hug fest, right? He says, look, because, look, the president holds the cards here, and here's why. Because when NAFTA started in 1994, it was passed in 93, implemented in 94, we had a almost $2 billion trade surplus with the government of Mexico. 25 years later, NAFTA, post-25, we have a $70 billion trade deficit with Mexico. So we had a $72 billion swing in cash their way, right?
Yeah, you might say the thing didn't work out quite the way it was promised. Also, they told us that the NAFTA deal was going to stop illegal immigration because everybody in Mexico was going to finally get a good job. It was going to raise the standard of living in Mexico, and all those people wouldn't have to come to California to work in your yard. But at the same time, you know, it's interesting. They were going to get a raise down there in Mexico and not have to come north to work. But at the same time, it was not going to take jobs away from the United States. The giant sucking sound that Ross Perot talked about, that's just foolish. That's nonsense. So the whole thing made no sense. It never quite worked out the way it was supposed to. And like you said, we now have a huge, huge trade deficit with Mexico. And what do all of the Cato Institute people say and all of the apologists for the globalists say to that? Oh, well, trade deficits don't matter. So they moved the goalposts. First,
exactly.
It was going to be, this is going to boost trade. It's going to be great. Americans are going to be selling more to Mexico. Turns out we're selling far less to Mexico. And now they say, well, it doesn't matter anyway. So, yeah. This is like Christmas in August. This is a day. There were sometimes I thought I would never see this day.
Me too.
Here we have the president actually doing what needed to be done. I'm not surprised that this president did it, the president. But we had Democrats. We had Republicans. We had Dan. And what did Barack Obama say when he ran in 2008? Oh, NAFTA's a disaster. We got to fix that. While he was saying that, his top economic advisor, Austin Goolsbee, was on the phone to the Canadian ambassador saying, don't listen to him. This is just campaign rhetoric. This is just BS. Mm-hmm. And then in this last election, Hillary Clinton says she's going to appoint her husband as the economic czar. And he's the guy who negotiated NAFTA. So, I mean, this is huge. This is an earthquake that has just rattled the foundations of globalism. More than rattled the foundations, it's toppled the Tower of Babel of globalism.
I love that line. It has toppled the Tower of Babel. And I don't know what the Cato Institute is going to do now. I mean, they must be running around with their hair on fire. And their last-ditch effort here was, I mean, their last bastion of defense to defend the slave trade labor network and the globalists turned U.S. workers into robotic Walmart commodities. Their last ditch effort was soybeans.
Right. We're not going to sell soybeans to Mexico.
Think about it.
Yes, that was one of the Cato Institute tweets the other day was, well, the American farmers have to, they were making fun of the President Trump, and they were saying, yeah, the American farmers have to realize they have to undergo some short-term pain in order to have long-term pain. No, I'm sorry. The American farmers realize they don't want to be at the mercy of one buyer in the entire world, that buyer being China. So.
But you really think about what President Trump did, and many of us that are protectionist, and I know some people hate that word and they want me to change it to strategic trader or something. I'm a protectionist. I want to protect our jobs. I'm proud of it.
Hey, I put they a used big to call P. it patriotism, right?
That's right? I put a big P by my name. I'm protectionist. Here's where I knew after 30 years here we were finally going to win. I mean, when their last hope of stopping the momentum that we had to convince a majority of people that this didn't make any sense for them was the soybean argument. I mean, that was the last thing you knew at that point.
The whole thing was amount to a hill of beans.
It didn't amount to a hill of beans, and it collapsed. And now you look at it, we got a better deal, better for our manufacturers, for our factories, for workers, for raises. Everything is good. And now he's really put Trudeau in a box because I don't know what Trudeau does now. And he says, look, if the Prime Minister of Canada doesn't want to play ball and step up, that's fine. You know, he's got a right to do what he wants. I'm going to go it alone with Mexico.
Yeah, that's right. And the Mexican economy minister was on with Laura Ingraham last night saying the same thing. Look, if Canada doesn't come on, we'd love to have Canada as part of the party. We'd love them to come on board. We're inviting them. Come on down. The punch bowl is out. It's full. It's ready. We're here. We got pinatas. We got sombreros. We got the whole thing. It's all ready to go. But if they don't, we're sticking by our deal with the United States. So, Justin, your move.
It is a great day in America, no question about it. And I was just talking to Corey Lewandowski, Curtis Ellis, who is with us now. The fake newsers, they're not going to say anything about this. You're not going to find it. They'd rather talk about Roger Stone or Michael Cohen or Robert Mueller or something. They're never going to mention this. And, you know, today's a great day for the American worker, American manufacturing. You know, it's a way now to back again, believe in your country and that we're going to start making things again. We're going to start building things.
We have to go back and look at the record, right? These are the same people that said Trump will never get the nomination. First, they said Trump will never run. The whole thing's a publicity stunt. Then, oh, he'll never get the nomination. It's impossible. He'll never win New Hampshire. It's impossible. He'll never win Indiana. It's impossible. He'll never get the nomination. He can't be elected. 98% chance there is just no path for victory for Donald Trump. And and they were wrong all the time, every single step of the way. They said, I've heard Obama say it. I heard John Kerry say it in 2004. Those jobs are never coming back. Manufacturing is never coming back. These jobs just aren't coming back. They accept the corporate globalization, the corporatist globalization, as some type of metaphysical inevitability, right? I mean, this is what Obama said when he was running, when he was at that fundraiser in Pennsylvania, and he said, oh, you know, the people, they just can't adjust to the immigration, and they can't adjust to the free trade, and their jobs going away, and that's why they bitterly cling to guns and Bibles. As though, folks, we make decisions. We get to decide whether those jobs are coming back. We get to decide whether we're going to dissolve our borders and dissolve our country and just sink into the glop of some global economy that's ruled by some mysterious force in Goldman Sachs' corner office. I mean, they have us believing in the Wizard of Oz. Don't pay attention to that man behind the screen who's named Goldman, or maybe his name is Sachs. I don't know.
Or maybe it's Sachs Goldman. But whatever it is, look, what Lower Manhattan wanted to do here and the whole globalist agenda, and remember, Cato Institute and Heritage Foundation, you know, they're all nice people, but let's just be candid and clear. They're funded. They are think tanks funded by the Wall Street globalist network. That's how they stay in business. That's how they pay their people.
Well,
so let's
yeah,
just stop the nonsense.
That's right.
Okay?
And then
let's
we learned this week that these other great, beautiful think tanks that are just so disinterested and objective and all-wise and all-knowing, like the Brookings Institute, and go down the line, they're funded by China. China is paying them. The Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party has a United Front Department. And what the United Front Department does is funnel money to think tanks in Washington to parrot the pro-China line, the pro-China communist line. And what is the Chinese Communist Party line? Globalization is good. And China is the defender of free trade. And we must have globalization. That's the natural, that's the historic inevitability. See, and this goes right back to the original Marxist line. Marxism talked about the historic inevitability of communism. Substitute globalization for communism, and you get the neo-Marxist line coming out of the Chinese Communist Party.
That is the neo-Marxist line is right up there with soybeans. I tell you what, it's a
right,
great line
soybeans
for the day.
Well, because they love soy sauce in China.
We're with Curtis Ellis. Curtis is a senior policy advisor for America First Policies and has been on the forefront fighting these trade deals with me for a quarter century, NAFTA, TPP, the Korean trade deal, the WTO, the whole bit. We were right. They were wrong. All the facts are in. It's been a catastrophe. It's been a disaster. And now the president is finally changing it. We never thought we'd see this day, so it's kind of like Christmas for us here in August. Curtis, let's go forward now.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Chinese tariffs. The success the president just had, I don't see him backing off on these tariffs. And remember, we have a $550 billion trade deficit with China. So that's just so everybody understands what that means. This means $550 billion more U.S. dollars are flowing to Beijing than Beijing is flowing to Washington, all right? $550 billion, that's cash. They need that cash, right? The
right
tariffs that they keep doubling down on threatens that $550 billion. It could go to zero, right? We don't need their consumers. They don't buy anything from us.
That's right. They don't buy anything from us. So every time we put tariffs on their goods, the Chinese turn around and put tariffs on something from us, an equal
they're
amount of tariffs. Well, they're going to run out of ammunition, right? They're going to run
we
out
don't
of
buy anything.
They can't see us. We can keep raising the stakes, and they're going to run out. They don't have anything to put tariffs on because they don't buy anything from us.
Bingo. Thank you. Thank you. So every time they say they're doubling down with another, you know, $50 billion, I laugh, and I'm like, $50 billion on what? Oh, let's get back. Soybeans. Let's get back to the soybeans now, okay?
Yeah.
The entire world market is going to crash over soybeans grown in Kansas. I mean, give me a break here. This is so ridiculous. And they don't have anything to put tariffs on. They don't buy anything. So they're after the $550 billion from us. As that door closes, I mean, their economy, they're going to have to make that $550 billion up. That's a lot of money on an annual basis to make up.
Oh, that's right. And they have to have this constant economic growth, and they have to completely and continuously keep exporting more to keep their factories humming, or the people in China are going to get very upset. They're going to get very upset because they've been promised by the Chinese Communist Party an ever-increasing standard of living. And the only way they can get that ever-increasing standard of living is by exporting more, because they don't have any – they've got a – look, they have a large middle class there. It's growing because all the managers of these joint venture partnerships that American companies are forced to enter into, they've got a lot of money, right? And the children of the Communist Party get those jobs, right? So there is a large middle class, but it's not big enough to support the growth model and the growth that the Communist Party has promised the Chinese people. So if they don't have – if they don't keep selling stuff to us, their whole thing collapses, and it's not a pretty picture. You got a lot of very upset people in China.
We hold the cards.
Yeah.
Trump holds all the cards. He knows it. That's why every time they double it, and he doubles down again, he laughs, because he knows he's in a game where mathematically he can't lose. And I like the odds when you're in a game you can't lose. Ever been in one of those games?
Yeah.
Okay? Right? I'm a basketball coach. I like playing teams that I know can't beat me, right? They try to run, we can run faster. They try to go inside. You know, I got eight guys that can hit threes. So they can't win. Trump can't lose this battle. And it is amazing to me the amount of flack that he keeps getting from the legacy media, the Wall Street Journal. I mean, I know they get it, right?
Oh,
I know
the Wall Street Journal had an editorial. They hate the new U.S.-Mexico trade agreement. They hate it. That tells me it's a good deal.
It's good. They hate it. What do they say?
They say, oh, well, the investor state dispute settlement mechanism, let me put that in plain English. Part of the deal says that if you invest in Mexico, if you're in a multinational company and you build a factory in Mexico and the Mexican and you have a gripe with something the government does down there, you got to go to the court in Mexico. Tough luck. You're not going to go to some international UN tribunal funded by the American government to protect your investment. Either you go to your insurance company or you deal with the corrupt judges in Mexico. That's a good thing. That'll make people want to invest in America, where you know the courts are clean and you know where you respect the rule of law. The multinational globalists hate that. They want to just erase our competitive advantage, which is our rule of law, just the same way they want to erase our borders. So the Wall Street Journal says, oh, that's terrible. That's terrible, getting rid of this dispute settlement deal. It's a horrible thing. So that tells me right there. It's a good deal. And they say the idea of paying people at least $16 an hour to work to build the cars that are going to be sold here, that's unenforceable. That's a horrible deal. You know, President Trump just gave the Mexicans a pay raise, right? Because it doesn't say those people earning $16 an hour have to live in the United States. Mm-hmm. So we're now going to have the people of Mexico wanting to vote for President Trump. Maybe that's going to increase illegal immigration. They're all going to come here so they can vote for President Trump. I don't know. But
or maybe it'll be the opposite, right? Maybe we'll have U.S. workers out of jobs on the border that want to go work for $16 an hour in the Mexican plant. Or maybe
where
it'll just stop them.
Where will go further, right? If you get paid $16 an hour in Mexico, you're doing pretty good. You know.
But, like, so. I mean, if you think about the $16 an hour thing, and I love this. I love this. Here's what the president says. Look, I get it. You have a right to build factories like I do. I get it, but I got to pay, you know, the U.S. worker makes way over $16 an hour, but you're paying them three, right? So they're basically, it's slave labor. It's what you and I have been saying for 30 years.
Yeah.
So now he's saying you got to pay them $16 an hour. And she's saying it's the Wall Street Journal says it's unenforceable. Well, that's like saying the minimum wage is unenforceable. I mean, it's not. They have to pay them $16 an hour, period.
Instead of the way it used to be under the existing NAFTA and all of these other stupid trade agreements like the Central America Free Trade Agreement, which has labor provisions. Oh, yes, they've got to treat their workers well. This is what all the Democrats negotiated. They've got to have labor provisions. They're going to treat their workers well. And then if there's a problem that, well, we don't think they're living up to that part of the agreement,
we gotta go.
What do? You'd go to some international court that's stacked against you, unenforceable, no way to do it. The whole thing is just a lawyer's make work for lawyers, because we took Guatemala before one of these courts. Nothing happened. You can't. It's ridiculous.
$16 an hour. You either pay it or they don't build the car. It's
right.
very simple.
All right,
there's 69 days left between now and Election Day. This is probably going to be the biggest 69 days in the history of any midterm ever. And so Republicans out there, you got to get off your butt. If you support Trump and you're an independent, you don't like voting in midterms, you know, you just showed up one time, you got to mark November 6th down on your calendar, because if the Democrats and Pelosi take the House, here's what's going to happen. The Trump agenda stops. There'll be no wall. There'll be no progress. They'll impeach him in 90 days. It's going to go to the Senate. He's going to get tied up for a year, and then we're going to start the 2020 campaign. Now, what the hell good is that? Why would you jeopardize this tremendous economy that we have? So any of you conservatives out there that don't like this one or don't like that one, get over it. Just get over it. Especially in Virginia's 10th district. Oh, I voted for Shaquille. I don't like Barbara. Barbara did this or Barbara did that. Or Barbara didn't support this or Barbara did. You can't be serious, right? Because your alternative to Barbara Comstock is Jennifer Wexton. Anti-Trump, never-Trumper, hater, progressive, whack-job liberal. Like, that's your choice. Right? Wexton wins, Trump gets impeached. Is that what you want? Well, I don't like Barbara because she didn't do this, and she didn't come to this meeting, and, you know, she didn't return my email. Get over yourself. Just get over yourself, man. If you're in the 10th district, listen to me right now, which is Barbara Comstock's district, and you like the economy, and you like what the president's doing, and you think he's getting screwed by the legacy media every day and everybody else and this coup with Mueller and everything else, go vote for Barbara. Period. Don't be telling me about, yeah, I voted for Shaquille, and now I'm going to stay home. Get over your damn self. I mean, there is bigger fish here to fry than your personal animosity with any particular candidate. I'm telling you, man, this election is critical. And if the Republicans hold the House in 69 days by three votes or two votes, and I think they got a shot. I think they got a shot. Maybe it's a 35% shot, but I'll take that. I think they got a heck of a shot based on this economy. If they hold the House, the entire resistance breaks down. The coup is over. The whole thing is over. Then Trump is going to get the rest of his America First agenda done, and he's going to get reelected again in 2020, only bigger. That's why it hinges on this. Now, the Republicans are going to gain seats in the Senate. A lot of people say three. I say five or six. It could be seven. It could be seven if Trump voters turn out. It's going to be seven seats. I mean, you might get up on November 7th, and the Republicans have held the House, and they went from 51 seats in the Senate to 58. That's not out of the question. Now, what message would that send to the fake newsers, to the legacy media, to those who are trying to institute a coup, to the Peter Strzoks of the world? What message is that going to send? The stakes here are really high, man. Get off your duff. 69 days. Get involved. Help your Republican congressional candidate. Doesn't matter who it is. I don't like this about Denver Riggleman. He did the... Get over yourself. It's a bigger picture